The Looking Veil.
The Looking Veil with Dr. Sherry Bainbridge.
And Leland Hoagie, combining ancient energy and spiritual knowledge with scientific evidence. And away we go.
Welcome, everyone, to this month's podcast, The Looking Veil. And we are the Veil Investigators, Dr. Sherry Bainbridge, Leslie Arboleda, and Leland Holgate. And we're going to get right to what we're talking about this month, which is how we get stuck and how to get unstuck. And we've all been in this, you guys. Every one of us has had to deal with being stuck in our thinking, stuck in our life. And it's part of how our world seems to be designed, especially in my opinion, in America, where there seems to be so many controlling factors. And we end up getting completely stuck. Can you imagine what it was like as a tribesperson to travel around your country and you put up your tent in one area, you're traveling the food around to other areas and so forth, and everything is always changing. But when we're living stationary, things don't change quite as much. And we find ourselves, as we've talked about before, how the brain gets stuck in thinking. And we're going to talk a bit about how to get unstuck. It happens so easily. And Mr. Leland, you've been dealing with your knowledge and information about how easily we get stuck and unstuck.
Oh my goodness. Yeah, absolutely. So one of the easiest ways that we get stuck is we're constantly in this fight or flight mode, right? Whenever you're in that fight or flight mode, basically what's happening is you're creating stress on the body. And when we look at the brain, the entire brain is ran by a conductor, and that conductor is the prefrontal lobe. Mm-hmm. Also the prefrontal cortex, which is where our personality is stored. And many times when we're getting stuck, it's because we're continuously finding ourselves in this stressed out loop. And when we're in that loop, we have something happening that's called cortical inhibition. So that's where your higher brain centers, the prefrontal cortex, the prefrontal lobe, all of these areas that actually control our logical thinking, our decision-making, all of these core areas are completely turned off. So when we get stuck in a lot of these beliefs, and we've kind of talked about it in one of our other episodes, right? A belief is just a thought that is thought over and over and over again until it becomes part of your character and then part of your personality. And when we get into these stuck moments, what do we find ourselves in? Constant loops, right? Thinking something bad might happen or fearfully not doing something because we're afraid of failing. And then we just automatically fail. So we find ourselves in these constant loops because what we're not keeping in mind is that when we're in those stressed out moments, there is no higher thinking. There is no logical thinking or decision-making that's happening. Everything that moves from the emotional seat of our consciousness, this midbrain area, completely takes over, and now the body's in fight or flight, and you really don't have a real clear or focused way to think through things. So of course, we just continuously do the same thing over and over again, because what does the body want more than anything? It wants to survive. That's all this thing worries about. As long as I'm sleeping, eating, and procreating, that's all it's worried about. So when we want to actualize and we want to find out, first of all, what's going on, figuring out that we're stuck is just recognizing that we're putting ourselves in a constant loop and pattern that our brain will continuously keep us inside of, because again, it just wants to keep us alive.
Now I have a question, Leland. When it comes to the looping thinking, do you find that, and maybe you've reached this in your studies or not, that the way our world is set up in being everything repetition, it trains our brain to get stuck in that loop thinking. What do you think about that?
Yeah, no, absolutely. There's a lot of things, especially in the Western society, that we have created for ourselves that is so far removed from that tribal state of living that we used to be in, that you find yourself in this artificial way of living. Instead of having to go out and hunt and gather, we're now going out to a job, or you know, we're performing some sort of skill. So thereby we have to train our way in other things, become basically a different person, and put yourself inside of this society's way of 9 to 5, figure out a certain skill. And that in a way kind of breaks that typical logical thinking that we are as human beings. And it's easy to get stuck into that machine that we have talked about.
How do you deal with that, Leslie? Because we all in our business, that's part of what we're doing to help people is getting them unstuck and unstuck in that looped type thinking. What's your statements on this, Ms. Leslie?
I think, you know, there's lots of different catchphrases out there these days, like neurons that fire together, wire together. And I think they're all really speaking to the, you know, that higher level explanation that Leland was sharing is our brain is made to find evidence that makes it right and to make the world predictable and safe. And I think as, you know, enlightened, aware human beings in 2024, we have a lot of freedom to be more curious, right? We can walk out the front door and not be fairly certain that a saber-toothed tiger is going to kill us if we're all by ourselves. Right. But I think it's, you know, that primal part of us is still very active and useful. It's really just a matter of how are we orienting to it? You all know, I talk about alignment and all kinds of different ways of life, whether we're talking about aligned with our clients or talking about being aligned with our family or talking about being aligned with our internal systems and how they're operating. And I know I certainly don't escape that feeling of stuckness, especially as the younger version of me. It was, you know, it was a defense mechanism. It was a trauma response. And because trauma was real in my life and I had very significant valid evidence to prove that it happened, it was easy to be defensive in my choices to keep it from happening again, instead of being a courageous individual who understands that curiosity really is the path to joy. And sometimes that puts you someplace that's, you know, mildly, moderately, or significantly painful, but that doesn't validate not being curious, I think. And so, you know, that's my own personal strategy for feeling unstuck is being bold enough to be curious with myself first, have a conversation with my reflection. Is this really where you want to be? Is this really how you want to do it? And then also be willing to get curious with the other people in my life. Because, you know, human beings aren't our best versions of ourselves in isolation. But we also have to take responsibility for how we, you know, participate in community.
Depending on your platform, please like, share, and comment, as drawings will occur throughout the year.
And this is part of how phobias and anxieties and so forth get developed. When we have a physical alteration of some sort, and we have strong emotional connections to that. Every time you think about this, the body is literally going through the same experience that it went through before, which is why PTSD and so on and so forth can be a real challenge for people, because that damages and continues to damage the body. When we can find ways to get ourselves past on a day-to-day basis, this loop thinking or thinking of the past and feelings that bring up that body reaction, what are some of the things you guys do? I use God's breath all the time, the divine, the creator's breath, whatever you want to call it, and I blow out my looped thinking, and I used to explode it, but the other side has told me to stop doing explosions, that they're violent, and that thought in and of itself creates that. So what are some of the more gentle ways that you guys do to get you out of the looped thinking and what you've shared with your clients that have been working for you? We'll start with Leslie on this one.
Again, not to sound too redundant, but I think your community matters. So I make sure that I'm part of multiple different conversations with people that I know will lovingly and gently hold me accountable to being a better version of myself. And one of my favorite teachers was just revisiting one of our lessons and talking about phobias, since you brought it up, and how so often people, especially in their adulthood, feel like this phobia is a persistent provocation, when really it happens in an instant. And it can happen in an instant in such an early part of our lives that we don't even realize that the instant occurred, because it feels like it's just always been that way, right? Like there's, and he was sharing a story about how, you know, a person with a fear of a phobia of spiders, and when they reverse engineered, like, when did this actually start? This person was a little bitty baby, and their parents had a crazy response to the baby picking up a spider and almost putting it in his mouth. And then they're, you know, and baby brains don't have that same development in their logical part of their frontal cortex just yet. And so the connection became more primal, and it became spiders are bad and scary, and they make things bad and scary in the world at large. And so I loved that I got to hear the story, because it was really enlightening to think about what are the things that we avoid in life persistently that really were just a one-time event that could be re-engineered in our current experience so that we are less burdened, less challenged, less fearful, more courageous, right? So I think for me, I don't know that it's quite as magical as a breathing exercise, but for me, it's really about being in conversation and being willing to be curious with myself about the things I think I know, because I'm using the finger quotes, because I think not even the things we know are still relative. It's still a perspective.
It is. And as we learn more and more, what does it do? It just brings up more questions going, okay, I can't even approach this side because there's no way to get an answer there. You know, lots of questions. Leland, what's your opinion on this?
Yeah, I love the accountability side of that, because that's huge inside of our community and inside of exactly what I'm working on with our clients as well. Because having those uncomfortable conversations sometimes, especially for self, having those uncomfortable conversations and having somebody mirror back to me that maybe there's a different way of thinking or a different approach is key for me as well, because then I'm getting out of my own way. I'm not feeding into my own loop. I'm taking in new perspective. And then of course, Leslie mentioned it, and you know, I was going to say it. I use the breath constantly, because of course, in those moments where I find myself in one of those mind loops where I'm stuck on thinking about the past situation. And like you said, the body's objective. It doesn't know that it's then, it acts like it's now. So in that moment, I allow myself to shift into a more regulatory breath pattern. I don't even really do the get high on your own supply stuff, just normalizing the body, bringing it back into coherence, and shifting the neuromodulators and neurotransmitters inside of my body. So that way I can push myself just slightly out of that loop, right? When I think about it, one of the best analogies I've ever heard from one of my professors was, when you look at the way brain cells, neurons fire and wire together, you can imagine a tractor that's constantly driving through a field, and eventually that tractor creates a rut, and there's your mind loop. Congratulations. This is just that rut that the brain automatically runs down when you think about that certain thing or whatever you're working on. So all you have to do is just slight little adjustments occasionally in those moments, because that's the key, right? I have to sit with that uncomfortable feeling or that loop that's coming up for me if I want to change it, because I have to first be aware of it. Then take control of my breath and just take slight little movements, just little bitty movements to adjust myself out of that rut. And I find that helps me out so much.
Now, for everyone, when we're learning something new, it's uncomfortable. The brain gets uncomfortable. It gets so lazy in its thinking and in its support of what we're choosing to think. Now, keep in mind, as we're talking, that feelings and emotions come specifically from your thinking. So whenever you have that stronger emotion arise, it is telling you, look at where your thinking's at. Because to help people get past some of these areas of getting stuck, the first thing you've got to figure out is, how is that person thinking? Where are they coming from? And what do we need to do in order to change that thinking so it's working for them? And we've been so taught in this world that the truth never changes. If you think it and you think it's true, therefore it is forever. And we know that's totally not true. Evolution and time changes absolutely everything. Hypnotherapy for me, doing past life regressions and going into the subconscious and conscious and energy and everything that you can go into, really helps my clients to be able to recognize these things and to change their thinking. It's just one of the many tools that people use. Leland uses breath, and Leslie, oh my God, she's got tools out the yin yang, the astrology, her two masters in psychology, her human design. And I believe that this also fits the human design element of changing thinking and so forth. Do you guys find that you hit that uncomfortable point? When I do, I'm telling myself, stop it, get excited. We're going to grab this and we're going to run with it. And this is a good thing, because I'm trying to, over time, change where my mind likes to go. What do you do, Leslie?
I'm a big fan of understanding the impact of meaning, because we really don't, as much as we want to think we can put a leash on the monkey mind and be in charge of our thoughts, that's not actually how the brain works. The brain is operating outside of our circle of control. It's the meaning that we're putting on the operations that is actually where I think our power sits. And being open to, like you said, the stop it part, that's already expert level adulting, right? That's already an outer layer of awareness, because some people don't even know that there's something that needs to be stopped, let alone how to redirect the energy. And it's about our focus. And I think that's where our power for change really lives, is knowing that, you know, it's even in a meditation practice, you're not actually stopping your thoughts. You're taking control of what you're focusing on in your thoughts. But the things that are happening in the background are still happening in the background, or at least that's my experience and what I hear reported from others. How about you, Leland? I know you have lots of experience in that realm.
Yeah, I mean, you kind of hit the nail on the head. Well, for one, obviously, you with what you just described about meditation, I think if people would recognize meditation isn't always just sitting still, closing your eyes, right? It's literally, like you said, it means to become familiar with, right? That's literally what meditation means. So in those moments, just slowing down and allowing myself to like kind of view myself in that very, like you said, stop it. Just the awareness level, that observer level or 20-foot focus, and then noticing what I'm focusing on. Like, okay, you dug in on that. Obviously, you're going to continue to feel what you're focusing on, because as you focus on that, you're creating a thought, which is an electrical signal. And now your body's going to have a magnetic emotional response to this whole thing. So I love the way that you described that, because I'm in the same boat. It's allowing myself to shift focus and be gentle with myself in the moment, recognizing I'm calling all these things in for myself. So Sherry, like you said, that is expert level, or Leslie said it herself, that's expert level adulting. Stop it.
Hold it. I have a reaction to adulting. Hold on. Sorry, guys. It just is. So when we get the things that interfere in our mind and our thinking, like television and commercials and so forth, for me, it's not that difficult to separate out, okay, what's me? I look at my past history. Is this saying exactly what I am and who I am and what I've done? Or is this statement completely off? Or am I seeing, having an emotional reaction to? Where does that come? How do you guys deal with your clients on that? Leland, let's start with you.
Oh, my goodness. So when... It's a tough thing for some people. I think Leslie kind of, again, knocked a home run when she said most folks don't even understand that there's something that needs to be shifted, especially with focus, right? So when I'm working with a lot of clients, especially when they're inside of these mind loops or whenever they're stuck, a regression in breath work is very similar to a hypnotherapy regression. So it's very powerful in the way of allowing them to, again, sit inside of what you're dealing with. You must first look, you must open up the onion at every level if you want to change anything whatsoever. So my first thing that I work on with clients is just getting comfortable with being uncomfortable. How comfortable can you be sitting inside of the soup? You know, if you can sit in the soup, you can change it.
Right. And that's what we are in this energy soup. What about you, Leslie?
I think, you know, when we were kind of talking about what we were going to talk about in this episode, and we were thinking about like the neurology of change and stuff. And one of the things that really came to my attention was, you know, like the neurochemicals, the soup of our brain that, you know, kind of like you were saying, Leland, they matter. Our thoughts create this chemical reaction in our body, and then this chemical reaction turns into this emotional expression. And I talk to my clients about it, but even on a personal level, in parenting right now, in our family counseling session, we were talking about dopamine this week. Like yeah. this whole idea of understanding, you know, like the primary functions of these major neurochemical reactions in our bodies and how they show up emotionally, how they show up behaviorally, really makes a difference. And how can you shift from, you know, a cortisol-induced stress response to a dopamine fixed, you know, is it my TV or my phone or whatever, to, you know, really utilizing your serotonin and feeling like that emotional regulation that we're all striving for. Like it's important for people to really understand that the mind-body connection is not just some woo-woo BS that a bunch of spiritual folks are talking about, but it's a real live living system of interaction in our bodies that then show up in our lives and our relationships. And I think it's just not, you know, I know I'm a bit of a science geek, but I also think it's just not talked about enough for people to really be able to serve themselves.
And for us to have an understanding of how this works gives us the recipe or the possible tools of the recipe and ingredients that are needed for us to move beyond this. Hold on a second while I tell you, I'm going to do a break here. Okay. Leland, when we go into some of this thinking that totally stresses out our body, because how we are affected by the world and how we think is everything. And it's what we've learned. We change that thinking. It eventually changes your actions. And that eventually changes your life. And of course, our goal is to streamline this for people as time goes on, because we're in the same boat trying to change our lives and using these techniques. And all we can do is share with other people as to what's working, what's not, so that other people can have a better understanding. So Leland.
Yeah. So when we look at these neurotransmitters and neuromodulators, again, Leslie knocked a grand slam. It's if we understood it more, and this is where the two geeks here for sure definitely get down on this. I want everybody understanding what your dose hormones do inside of your body. Because the more we understand these things, the more you can literally guide your own experience. You can be in the worst, absolutely worst feeling you've ever felt. And if you understand that shifting just small pieces of your experience in this moment will change the levels of dopamine, will change the levels of oxytocin, then you can completely shift and open up that experience for yourself.
But that also includes, doesn't it, recognizing that to me, emotion is a huge divine communication. Yeah. When a negative emotion comes up, it's cluing you into that somehow your thinking is off. Yeah. I had a lady in my car the other day that said something to me that really upset me. I just wanted to cut her head off. She had no idea really what she was talking about, but I stopped and I looked at myself and went, okay, why am I having this negative emotion so strong? Because when you have these type of things that are so strong, pay attention to it. And I went back to, okay, what am I thinking? What's upsetting me? Oops, the little ego's involved there. Now let's set that aside. And you start getting rid of some of this garbage that's in the way to get to your thinking or to the message that's being given you so you can be receptive to that. Leslie, what's your response to this information?
I think that yes, and is my response. It's bi-directional. Your thoughts determine your emotions when your emotions determine your thoughts. And so being able to understand like which direction is this system operating in right now? And are my emotions really a cue of something that needs to be changed, or are my emotions the result of something that already changed inside of me somehow, right? And understanding like, yes, it is a loop, but it's happening in multiple directions simultaneously. And it's having a really complex interaction with this, you know, meat suit, which is really pretty basic, like in and of itself. Like, this isn't the really complex part of me. and understanding, you know, yeah, my emotions are important to pay attention to for sure. But if we're always letting them drive the bus, then sometimes what we're doing is just kind of like keeping the tractor in the rut and letting it get so deep that the wheels can't come out, right? That there isn't this opportunity to turn the steering wheel and shift in a new path. And so, you know, I think it's important, because self-accountability is the hardest kind of accountability. I think it's important to be vulnerable enough to share these experiences, or be bold enough, like you, Sherry, to share them with the world about what's happening and what you'd like to happen differently, whether it's in the moment or whether it's, you know, the next time you have someone in your car that's provoking in some way.
Yeah.
Right. It is a total different way of looking at the world and looking at life. My life happens to be one where I took on a lot of difficult experiences. I've been caught up in other people's karma. There's all sorts of things that happen. People that get into a mindset that karma is only going to affect you and you can't be affected by other people's karma. That's not true. But I've been one that's had to get past PTSD, PTSD freeze, raised in a very abusive home, a lot of things to have to get past. And it's a part of tweaking this part of me that aids in my ability to help other people and have such a huge curiosity and broad thinking about all of this. Getting past these type of, and in the other second half later this month, we'll talk a little further about some of the details, but getting past some of this can really be difficult for people to do, because we end up beating ourselves up. And the whole key to this is the biggest craving people have is that of connection to themselves, connection to others, connection to our spirit and universe. And we over time have handed that power over to somebody else. So we want to help people get reconnected to this part of them, balance the world they're living in, and find ways to rise above so that we are aligning things in such a way that we can prosper and thrive in this life. But it starts with the individual. And that starts with how we design ourselves as a human being. And Leslie, you do the quantum human design, and she's an expert at this. And I am floored at the work that they do, because to me, this look at human design is absolutely the key. So if the audience out there gets a chance, take a look. We'll try to include a link that can help you out in finding more information about this. So Leslie, could you respond a little bit on what I've just said?
I think it's really important to understand that I love human design. It's one of my favorite lenses of understanding, but I use it a little bit differently than a lot of people who use the ethereal sciences. I don't look at a person's chart or their blueprint and say, this is who you are, because who you are is an ever-changing expression of your humanness. I use human design and share a body graph or a blueprint with people to help them understand how they process energy. And as much as I love to talk about the astrology and the human design and the energetics of life, I'm also really clear to offer the qualifier that it's not all energy. If we were meant to be all energy, we wouldn't have inhabited these bodies. We wouldn't be having this human physical experience. We wouldn't be operating with this complex brain inside our heads that help us or hinder us in utilizing or processing that energy. And so I think it's, you know, again, as much as I love the lens of self-understanding, I think it's just one part of the process of living that healthy, joyful, and abundant life.
Exactly. And Leland.
Yeah, it's, you know, I think the biggest thing is, and to your experience, right, and your account, what you had with the lady in the car, is finding our way to being responsive, right? I'm sure you took a moment to yourself. You didn't chop her head off. She was, she got out of her car.
Now the question in my head may have.
You may have. But therein is my point. You were responsive. And I think that's the biggest thing that I've been working with clients, and to Leslie's point, is just helping them understand, how are you processing this moment right now? How are you processing this situation? And recognizing that if you make a decision in that moment, that's going to be called a reaction. Know that your higher brain centers, when you want to chop that lady's head off, are turned off. And then you took a moment to yourself, allowed that regulation to happen, which then allowed you to be more responsive. So for me, that's exactly what I'm focusing on. Thank you for highlighting that, Leslie, is how are you processing this right now? It's not wrong. It's not right. There's no good. There's no bad as far as your emotions go. There is just, how are you processing it? And are you reacting or are you responding?
And that's a key to anybody who's in mental or physical health, is you have to figure out how the person is really thinking, how they are processing before they can do that. And we all deal with that all the time, even with ourselves. Leslie.
I think the meaning making is really powerful for folks too. And really understand that, like Leland said, there is no good or bad. And I know that can be really confronting for folks when they want to validate their experience one way or the other. But the good or bad comes through our lens. It comes through our understanding. It comes through our lived experiences. And being able to you know, I use the analogy of living a story, and sometimes people are also kind of confronted with those words, at least initially. It's not a story, it's true. Yeah, but you're holding the pen. So like, you get to decide what's true also. And yes, that happened, but and rewriting your story is not a time machine, but it absolutely is the most empowering part of, it's a time machine for the future. You know, it's your choice, the meaning that you put on whatever these not good, not bad energies and experiences are. And then also, you know, kind of back to the brain part of it, understanding that the meaning creates these thoughts and feelings and thoughts. And if you want to be empowered and you want to be joyful, orient yourself in some way, whatever that creative, unique way is, to bring you and create that feeling within you and through you.
And this is part of understanding the science behind some of this stuff, because it gives great visualization and it aids in meditations and things that you're doing to alter and change. When I'm working on my neck damage, I have not regrown my spine, so I still have the damage. When I'm working on my neck, I'm literally picturing the separation of, which is not normal, by the way, of my, what are they freaking called?
Vertebrae.
Thank you. Of my vertebrae and how separate they are. And I know that the tissues and the ligaments are all damaged, but by understanding that, I can visualize those ligaments. I can visualize, and I use miners, by the way. I have miners that go up and down my body and in my veins, and they're chopping things away, and they're, you know, doing all that. They're healing and they're repairing and all that good stuff. Again, we know we can use our imagination to aid our mind and our body and our spirit to get on the same page. So by understanding this, it gives you tools that you can adjust to hone in on the work that you're trying to do on your regular body. Thank you guys so much for joining us this week. And we look forward to continuing this conversation in the other half. So you guys have a wonderful month and we will talk to you later. Thank you so much for joining us. Namaste.
Brought to you by Holistic Collaborations. Visit the website at thelickingveil.com for more information.
We are not licensed doctors or mental health professionals, and the podcast is for informational purposes only. It is not to be considered a substitute for medical or mental advice, diagnosis, or treatment.